Hello, welcome along to another episode of the Two and Under podcast, the Southern Hemisphere's biggest, best, only dedicated Newcastle United podcast. I'm Jack in Brisbane. I'm here with Tommy, who is an Australian Spurs fan who lives in Japan. We spoke to Tommy first 2 years ago, so a little bit has happened since then, Tommy, but it's nice to have you back on. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, I was listening back to the podcast we did 2 years ago, and Antonio Conte had been there for about 6 months by that point, and we were still very much in the post takeover glow of all that excitement and all that joy. So, quite a lot's happened for both clubs since then. Football, you know, a lot happens in a short space of time. So, we're going to get into some of that stuff. We will, of course, be previewing the game coming up at St. James's Park, which is Saturday evening. So it's an absolutely perfect for people who live on this side of the world. You're in Japan now, so I think it's an 8:30 kickoff for you.
Prime time, yeah.
Prime time. It's 9:30 for us in East Coast Australia, and we're all in the same time zone again now. So you can't complain, can you, with a kickoff like that after all of the 1 and 2 a.m.s that we put up with usually?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you take them when you get them, that's for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So Newcastle have not had a good record in these games recently, up until the West Ham game, which was over Easter weekend, which was pretty phenomenal. So if we can get something similar to that, we'll be laughing, but we'll see how we go. It'll be nice to be able to watch a game at a reasonably normal time for a change. So let's get straight into it, Tommy. I really want to talk about Ange Postecoglou. We are a Newcastle United podcast, but we're also an Australian podcast. You're a very good person to talk to about Ange, of course, because you're a Spurs fan, you're Australian, but also you live in Japan, which is where he worked for a little while. So I remember talking to you a bit on Twitter when it looked like Ange was going to get the job, and then he did get the job. And it was very interesting to see some of the reaction on Twitter who think he's only managed in farmers leagues and, you know, a lot of snobbishness basically towards him, who don't understand what he's about and what he's done. But how did you feel as an Australian Spurs fan when he got the job? And what did the appointment represent to Spurs as well at that time?
Good question. As I would take the Australian part out of it totally, and so I was so excited to get him. I had him on my radar as a potential Spurs manager when he joined Celtic, having seen him in Japan, seen him win the Asian Cup. I thought he had the kind of philosophy that would suit Spurs. And so when it came to fruition, I couldn't believe it. I didn't think we would actually make that step. But yeah, I was so happy. It just felt like particularly at that time, the exact person we needed. And in terms of what it represented for Spurs, it represented a real step down, I think. And that's no disrespect to Ange. But going from Mourinho and Conte to suddenly really having a look at what's been successful for Spurs in the past is not those big name managers. It's Martignol, Harry Redknapp, Pochettino. Giving someone like that the chance and the resources and thinking more about a 3, 4, 5 year plan as opposed to let's just win now, because as we're often reminded, that hasn't happened.
Yeah, it hasn't. And Spurs went very big, like you said, on Jose Mourinho, big name manager, Conte. It's fair to say it probably didn't really work out under those managers, did it? They didn't bring the success that they thought they were going to.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Spurs fans, I think, you know, hindsight's 20/20, that you look back and they were terrible appointments. But at the time, I think they made sense. I think with the squad we had coming off the Champions League final, the dip that we had after that, you think someone like Mourinho might be able to come in and at least get us over the line. But, you know, as it turns out, that was the wrong approach. And so I think that's what Ange's appointment spoke to that a lot, that we need someone who's going to build something.
Yeah, yeah. And he's very happy to be there as well. And I remember watching his first press conference, and it doesn't feel like he's doing the club a favor in a way that I did with the others a little bit. So, Absolutely. But is he still sort of thought about well in Japan as well, or do they kind of think well of him because he won the league there, didn't he? And obviously he had Barcelona pulling up trees here and there in Brisbane as well. Yep. So he's had vast success in other countries, which just wasn't, people just didn't care about that, or they just don't think it counts because it didn't happen in Europe. But then even he did at Celtic, but there's a lot of snobbishness as well about Celtic in the Scottish League. So is he still thought of in Japan? And he obviously is in Australia, a very popular figure.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, definitely Yokohama F. Marinos. He totally converted that club from, you know, they were struggling for a long time. And since he left, it's been Kevin Muscat and Harry Kewell who have been managers there. So clearly he had an impact on the wider league, definitely. I mean, he brought a different kind of fresh approach to how football's played here. In terms of like the general public, if it's not Shohei Ohtani, then it doesn't get any coverage at the moment. So I wouldn't say he changed a whole lot, but definitely in terms of football and specifically Marinos fans and people associated with them, yeah, he's still very fondly remembered.
And I know you said before to take out the Australian part, but you must be a bit proud. Part of you must think, there's an Aussie managing my club. How good is that?
I mean, it's just bizarre. You know, growing up, I'm from Sydney, born in Sydney as a Spurs fan because my dad, we were always so far away. And then 2015, Spurs came to Sydney for the first time in 35 years. And since then, it's just been ridiculous, tour after tour. And now an Aussie manager. And also Scott Munn, the executive, whatever it is, director of football, whatever the title is. Yeah, it was just, it's strange. But yeah, obviously proud. But also there's an element of that where I don't want to share it with non-Spurs Australians as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, yeah. And it'll be interesting when they come to Australia for this post-season tour. I was going to talk about that a bit later, but let's touch on it now. So there is a friendly between Newcastle and Spurs at the MCG, which is the Wednesday after the season finishes. Mm-hmm. I don't know how happy the managers will be about that. Obviously, it's nice for Ange to come back to Melbourne, but to me, that's just crazy. Like, I understand the reasons why, but like, it's. I think it's the week before the FA Cup final, and then there's the Euros and the Copa America. So there's going to be a lot of tired players. Both clubs have had a lot of injuries this season, really long seasons. So is this just going to be a big Ange love-in, or is it just sort of like a commercial opportunity, or is it a mixture of both for all of that?
I imagine Spurs got a few zeros dangled in front of them and thought, well, why not? Probably the same for Newcastle. Not that you guys need it, but yeah, it's a weird one. I agree with you. I think in the context of post-COVID, World Cup, everything is so much football, and with the Euros as well, Asian Cup, of course, African Nations Cup as well this season. It's just too much football for them and too much travel. Like, yeah, it's a weird one for sure.
You feel a bit like a party pooper when you sit here and moan about your club coming to Australia when you live here. But it is like I'm going to take my daughter down to watch it and stuff, so that'll be good. But in a purely football sense, I can understand why they do this for commercial reasons. And you said before about Newcastle don't need the money. They don't, but they do as well because of FPP and financial fair play considerations. So we need to maximise revenue as much as possible. So I'm just thinking of the reaction if, say, I don't know, Anthony Gordon or somebody or Trippier comes over, plays, gets injured and then misses the Euros, you know? It'd be a pretty fierce reaction. But this is modern football, I guess. So, and do you think it'll have an impact, Ange being there, in terms of Spurs attracting more supporters from Australia?
100%. Yeah, I really do. I think anyone who was kind of interested in the Premier League, didn't really have a team, they'll 99% will become Spurs fans, I'd say. And that would only grow massively if we end up being successful with him. I'd be curious. Obviously, I live in Japan, so I don't know exactly how much coverage we get there. But from what I see, Optus are always, I mean, Optus and all those sort of online outlets just obsessed with him. So it can only be a good thing for not just Spurs, but for Ozspurs, the supporters club as well, who I've been heavily involved with. So, yeah, it's great from that perspective.
One of the funny things about Australian media that I picked up when I moved here was they're just unashamed about how much they love Australia, Australians. Like if the Australian national team loses in any sport, if they lose a match or a test match or something, it's never on the news. If they win one, it's all you hear about for 3 weeks. So it's a in the UK.
I mean, even the articles
can be a bit more balanced.
That's right. When we lose to Fulham 3-0, the articles are like, you know, some sort of positive spin on it. Oh, Andrew's learned a lot about his players this week. And
That's
been wrong.
Optus put the clips out of his press conferences and stuff as well, which I actually wanted to touch on, because to me, there's been sometimes when there's a new manager or there's like a new flavor of the month, everyone gets really excited. And then there's like a reaction to that where other people are like, no, he's just like, they can't wait for him to fail and all that sort of stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. But to me, like, he just seems like such an authentic, like, person who just says, like, his values obviously come across, and he talks about his upbringing, and, you know, he went to the matches with his dad, and he's obviously from the Greek community, Melbourne community, and things like that. And he just says things that just chimes with, I think, what the average supporter probably feels. Like, just last week he was talking about, somebody asked him a question about tourist fans, and he just shot that down straight away. He said that the club's not a financial institution, it's a football club. So that when he was talking about the Champions League qualification, and he's talking about only wanting to sign players who want to play for Spurs. So as a fan, this is just what you want to hear, isn't it? And this is coming from a real authentic, genuine person, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the main reasons that I was really wanting him to come into Spurs, was because I'd listened to particularly Conte for the better part of 18 months, even when we were doing well, do nothing but slag the club off in the press. Always complaining, I've not got enough money, I've not got enough players. Even the players I've been given, I didn't want. Just nonstop negativity that he brought to the club. And so Ange is just, I felt that if he came in, he would kind of protect the club publicly, which I thought is a huge part of football managing, I think. So I love that from him. But yeah, you're right. He's also, he's just a football fan at the end of the day. I think he wasn't a brilliant player. He's not just ended up as a coach because that was kind of, he wanted to be a coach. He loves football and he wanted to do it in the way that his dad loved football, which I think is what resonates with us as fans.
Yeah, he's done the hard yards. He's been through all of the, he was in the Melbourne club scene, wasn't he? And then he's done Australia.
I mean, he was famous for 4 or 5 years for an SBS interview with Craig Foster, right? That interview, a fight. That was, you know, he was laughing stock kind of level at that point. I'm like, the way that he came back from that and he got his chance with the Roar, and yeah, and just to jump back to Japan very quickly, that for me is his most impressive bit of work, because he had to do it through a translator. Like, so much of him is his voice, right? How he talked to people, and he had to do that via a translator and still had that success is impressive.
It's amazing, isn't it, what he's done. And the turnaround in the culture as well. Spurs, we witnessed Spurs firsthand at their very lowest point last season, which
thanks for bringing it up.
I think you knew we were not going to get through this podcast without talking about that, but that was like that club was just, and I recognize that from what Newcastle have looked like sometimes, and that was after Conte and Stellini was there, and it was just an absolute mess. Obviously we benefited from that, but the turnaround in the culture from that time to this season has been absolutely remarkable, and that's got to be a lot to do with Ange. Maybe just the fact it wasn't Conte and it was someone who is positive, but how has he actually done that? He's turned that damaged mess around into, you know, at the start of the season it was unbelievable, the positivity at the stadium. Obviously they were winning games then, but how has he done this?
Yeah, I think the simplest way to break it down would be just being authentic with us as fans. I'm sure he's exactly the same with people at the club. He's got a plan. He knows what he wants to do, importantly. I don't think we've had that since even before the Champions League final with Poch. I think we lacked a plan that season. And I think he's just the type of personality that galvanizes people. He gets them to do what he wants them, just through some sort of, I don't know, aura, or pick any buzzword you want. It's a good question that I'm not sure, but from that was hard to watch, that new card, like genuinely painful to watch that game, because it just represented everything. It wasn't just the result, you know, it was as low as Spurs have been for probably 20 odd years. And yeah, to turn it around that quickly is just incredible.
That game was absolutely like that. That was sort of like peak post takeover for us, and we had two really good wins over Spurs last season. But I remember looking at the team sheet for that game, and there was Perisic and I think it was Porro maybe, or someone at right back, and it was like, I don't watch Spurs every week, but I know that they're not that natural fullbacks. And then the midfield was looked a bit lightweight as well. So as soon as the team sheet came out that day, I felt confident. And actually, at the time, it was two clubs who were vying for the top four at that time. I think there was only a few points between us, and then
we
just went in opposite directions after that game. But yeah, that was to see Spurs in that state was obviously good for us that day. But yeah, it's just made it all the more remarkable, really, what he's actually managed to do to turn things around. And to have done it having lost Harry Kane as well. So sometimes things can actually work in clubs' favours. And it sounds like counterintuitive when you lose your best player, one of your best ever players. But do you think that's, in a way, it freed things up a bit, and it's let Ange do his thing without that kind of huge figure there as who really was so influential, even though he's a player, in what the club did and what happened at the club?
Yeah, I mean, I would never say that we're better off without him, because, I mean, he's one of the world's best strikers. But I agree. I think a combination of how we ended last season and then losing him gave Ange just a really blank slate, no expectations. This season is about building. And that is the key part for me in terms of, like, he's just blown away those expectations. So that then has the effect of, well, we'll buy in even further then. So yeah, if we had Kane, then I honestly think we could be in that battle for the title, you know, that seriously. But obviously, you know, maybe it wouldn't have gone as well. I don't know. Yeah.
And the way that the FFP, and they call it PSR now, so obviously there's been a lot of controversy and difficulty around that this season because of the mess it's created at the bottom of the league. But Spurs, we know that when a club sells a homegrown player like Harry Kane for that much money, then that gives them a lot of leeway in terms of money to spend. So they didn't spend that much in the summer, I don't think, or they definitely had money left over. And then they were the only club, I think, this January who actually managed to go into the market and spend some money. So that's actually given Spurs, put them on a pretty decent footing, hasn't it, going into the next transfer window. And it'll just be about spending that money wisely from this point on and making sure the squad gets built properly.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like finally Daniel Levy's plan is coming home. Like, this is what he's been building for, a self-sustaining club, do it the right way through the stadium, all of that. It's just whether those rules change again and, you know. But now it looks very positive for us. Yeah, we look like one of the only teams that can spend, and we've got a great base now, a manager who knows what he wants. He's going to make, I mean, in the past we've struggled with that because we've gone from Poch, who was very attacking, to Mourinho, Conte with Nuno in the middle, who, I mean, they're all boring, but boring in different ways, right? Wingbacks, yeah, that Conte needed. There was just no plan there, right? No way of signing. Like, Pedro Porro was bought as a right wing back, and everyone thought, oh, geez, now we've got to play him as a right back, and we got lucky with that, but that doesn't happen very often. So just having a manager who knows what he wants, knows his system, can only make it easier to spend that money wisely.
Yeah, we talk about alignment at Newcastle, where everyone at the club is pulling in the same direction, and that's what you need. Like, you can't have, and Man United are a good example of this, where there's just been such a mess of sort of different ideas, and look at the squad they've ended up with. But we've got our own sort of issues at the moment with financial fair play. The fact that you have to sell homegrown, or that you are incentivized to sell homegrown talent for a lot of money, is obviously a problem with the rules. And everyone's self-interested. So we didn't used to care about FFP before we were bought by, you know, to Saudi Arabia. But we have been. So now we want to be able to spend that money that we can. So the rules might end up changing, but Spurs have got the stadium, and they're making a lot of money from that now. And that was obviously a big investment, but they've got NFL games and concerts and things there as well. And by all accounts, it's an amazing stadium. But how come there's no naming rights for it yet? Because that's been talked about for a while, but that might be something that's on the cards soon that would boost the revenue further.
Yeah, I mean, it's a topic that's spoken about by Spurs fans a lot, because a lot was made of it before the stadium opened, that, you know, we're going to have a naming rights partner trying to get the fans used to it, that it's not going to be White Hart Lane anymore. And then it just never eventuated. I can only assume they just haven't got what they seem is enough money for it, or maybe the length of deal, things like that. Or Daniel Levy spoke, I think, last year about the right type of partner, not gambling outlets, things like that. It's a very important part of the brand to him, which is great. I love that we've got someone he's got his critics, but he protects Spurs at all costs, I think, Levy. The other side of that is that the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in America is on the NFL every other week. So that brand value can't be understated as well. You know, how much money does that bring in? Does that convert Spurs fans and things like that? So the one thing that I find confusing is football fans often, like, we hate sponsors. We don't want sponsors on our kits. We don't want sponsors. And then all these Spurs fans are saying, why don't we have a sponsor? Like, make up your mind. I would rather it not have a sponsor, right? Like, how annoyed were you guys when you had, what was it?
Sports Direct. That was Sports Direct. That was a little bit different because he wasn't paying for it and because he'd sort of plastered it. But no, you're right. Like, we're currently having conversations and debates about our stadium because we've got a really good stadium, 52,000. We probably need it to be a bit bigger. We need a bigger corporate aspect of it, which is what Spurs do well now. So Spurs have got the London benefit, obviously, as well. But some of our fans are talking about 75,000, 80,000 seat stadiums. I don't think we need a stadium that big. I think we probably need about 60 to 65 to maximize it just right. Because otherwise, it won't be empty, but there'll be a lot of empty seats for some games when we don't have a lot of success, like when we're not riding this takeover wave still. So, but Spurs is about 60, isn't it? Didn't Spurs make theirs just a little bit bigger than Arsenal's for that reason?
Yes, apparently. I'm not sure how much of that's true, but yeah, 62,000 and something is just a little bit bigger than, and a lot better than the Emirates. I think even as non-Spurs fans could say that.
But the Spurs stadium, it looks amazing, you know, like, and I think that they seem to have done well out of that. So it's something that we are interested in as Newcastle fans. What have other clubs done to try and, because we spoke about this last time you were on, but Newcastle and Spurs were pretty equal in terms of revenue and income and things at the time Mike Ashley took Newcastle over in 2008. And then Spurs have obviously just gone into joined the big six in terms of revenue, and we're kind of trying to catch up and bridge that gap. So but it's probably going to take a bit of time and maybe some creative Manchester City style accounting and sponsorship deals.
I'm sure. Yeah, I don't want to slag off Newcastle on a Newcastle podcast, but I'm sure those deals are being thought about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is funny, like you said, fans have gone from, we don't want naming rights, and, you know, who wants naming rights? You know, who wants the stadium to be renamed? But I think the Newcastle at the minute are doing a good job of making people, with the constant talk about financial restrictions, and making fans actually come around to the idea of, you know, like, expanded corporate areas, and we need to maximize revenues, and they're about to put season ticket prices up and things. So it's just modern football, isn't it? It's the way it is now.
Exactly right. So, like, how have we all got to the point where we accept this just because we want a fancy new player? Like, this is, modern football is all about, like Ange said, we're not a financial institution, we're a football club. It's all about who's the hottest sporting director that we can get to sign players, and, you know, our balance sheet is better than yours. Like,
And there was funny sort of conversations going on about how Spurs probably want Arsenal to get through in the Champions League because of the coefficient thing. No, so if
I would rather Europa League than Arsenal.
But like the way it works now is that with the coefficient, it's between England and Germany for who gets that fifth Champions League spot, and Spurs are obviously battling with Aston Villa for that. So anyway, let's talk about some of the football then. So Spurs have had a pretty good season, haven't they? After the first 10 games or something. Obviously, there was a lot of happiness and a lot of excitement around, and probably just relief to have a manager who's playing some nice attacking football. But how's the season been as a whole for Spurs?
It's been a weird one, yeah. So undefeated the first 10 games. I mean, that was just absolutely insane. I went over, I was at the home game against Liverpool, where we won last minute, the famous offside game, which Liverpool fans will be very quick to remind you of. That was just absolutely insane. The best football experience I've ever had. It was incredible in the stadium afterwards. Since then, we had obviously that famous Chelsea game, which just, I mean, if we didn't have that, you'd only wonder where we'd be, because we lost Romero, Doggy suspended, both got red cards that game. Madison and Van de Ven both got injured. And then from then on, it just continued to steamroll, getting worse each week with injuries, as you guys experienced too.
Yeah.
So that Chelsea game kind of completely just did a 180 on the season. We then went, five games, I think it was, without winning. And then at that point, crazy again, modern football, people are talking about, oh, is Ange good enough? I'm like, come on. It's just insane. Since then, I think that you can sum up just inconsistent, which is, I think, where we are, where we are. You know, the teams that battle for fourth are usually inconsistent, right? If you're consistent, you'd be in the title race. But there's still so much positivity, I think, in the way we play. The fact that it's happened this quickly, that we've become a potential Champions League club in 8 months, is just insane, right? So overall, it's been a really great building season, and I'm super excited for next season. I don't care, to be honest. Obviously, I want to finish in the Champions League, but I really don't care. I'll take fifth, sixth, because it's all about from next season on for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask about the objectives for Spurs for the rest of the season, because they're now in a pretty decent position. And if fifth place goes to the Champions League for England, then they're almost certain to get that, because I think they're 10 points above Man United or something, or 11 points above Man United. So has the expectation shifted? That you obviously hasn't for you. You're talking about next season already, but like we've experienced, and like we know happens with football fans, expectations shift very quickly, and people start thinking, we have to get Champions League. Is that happening at Spurs? Or because Spurs have played Champions League relatively recently, it's not such a big deal as it was for us, for example, last season when we were going for it?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a split. There's a group of fans who are kind of like, well, we're top after 10 games. How are we only battling for fourth? Which is just, I mean, you don't win the title in October, right? So the expectations were set so high at that point that now anything other than first is a disappointment for some people, which is just, I mean, stupid. I think in general, people are hanging on to the hope of Champions League because, you know, it can just expedite things. As much as Ange says it's not the magic pill to all success, and he's totally right, but it can help with the money, the revenue that you get from that. So, compared to other points in our history, I don't think it's as crucial as it was, because we have this plan now. Fifth, even Europa League, no problem. I think we need, this season we've had so few games because we got knocked out in the second round of the League Cup and then the fourth round of the FA Cup. So we've played by the end of the season 41 games, which is, I think, been the biggest detriment. As much as I've enjoyed not having midweek 5 a.m. kickoffs and then Sunday nights, just the lack of rhythm, I think, has really affected the team. And when you've had all those injuries, to bring in the players who have played, they haven't played a game for 4 or 5 weeks, to suddenly they're a crucial part of the system, it's been really tough. So just having any European football, I think, is important.
That's interesting, because last time we spoke, and other people talk about this as well, there's an idea that playing Europa and Conference League is quite difficult because you go Thursday to Sunday, and that can be quite draining. Our experience this season, we got PSG, Dortmund, and AC Milan. So we had a really tough Champions League group.
And you got ripped off in that too.
Yeah, we did. We very much did. But we also shot ourselves in the foot in the last game against Milan, because if we'd have won that, we would have gone through. Or even if we'd have drawn, would have gone to the Europa League. But because our squad wasn't that deep, we ended up playing the same players again and again. And then the injuries started piling up towards the end of that Champions League run as well. And that's kind of killed our season. So we would have done anything at points this season to have less games.
It's funny, right?
Yeah. You can see from both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, last season I was very happy not to have European football, because I thought, well, it gives Ange, you know, he's got 4 weeks on the training pitch then to work with the team. And that, I think, I would still agree with, maybe if it was the second or third season. But first season, I think we needed some more games just to kind of really solidify, because he's got such a specific style, and it's very different. You know, when you've got like Giovanni Lo Celso, I think, is a good example. He just doesn't play enough football to find a rhythm. And that has affected us over the course of the season, I would say. So I think in Newcastle's position, definitely less football would have been great, and we would have taken some of that off your hands.
Yeah, and for us, for next season now, we've had a taste of Europe, so we want to get back into it. And it doesn't matter. Well, obviously, Champions League is gone now, but we would love to get in the Europa League, and that's our big target for the rest of this season. Because you'll have opposition that aren't as strong as PSG, Dortmund and Milan as well. And we'll hopefully be able to, we'll have a bit of a stronger squad, and we'll be able to rotate a little bit more and just get more used to that European football as well. I think it's been a big, big learning curve for Eddie Howe this season as well, in terms of Europe. It's the first time he's done it.
Well, I think the Champions League also has like in the Europa League, you can actually rotate a bit more because there's just less pressure. The teams aren't as good, obviously. But when you play in Champions League, you play your best team in those games, and then you've got to play them in the Premier League as well. So you don't really get the chance to rotate. And in a first season, we had exactly the same experience in the Champions League in 2015, it was, I think, with Poch, where we went out in the group stage pretty pathetically because the squad just wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, I looked at the Man's, when we got knocked out, I looked at Man City's Champions League campaigns as well, and they got knocked out. The first one, they weren't too bad. The second one, they were bottom of the group and got knocked out. But then they won the league that season. So it was a different time then, I guess. They could spend what they want and everything. But I just think this has been a really useful experience for us, even though it's been very bruising and very damaging. And we're desperate now for more European football. So that's definitely what we're aiming for next season. We've already talked about, I wanted to talk about previous games that we've had between the clubs. We don't have to talk about the 6-1 again if you don't want. The other game last season was really important for us. That was our win at Spurs. That was a real signal for us that we were here to be taken seriously. That was it was kind of like a statement win for us. So very fond memories from last season.
Game I remember. That was when my first doubts about Conte crept in, that game, because we were just awful.
First 15 minutes was Spurs were good and it could have scored a couple of goals. But after that, we totally controlled that. And it was probably Newcastle at our best. And Spurs, I think, had lost a couple of... No, they hadn't lost a home game until that point for quite a long time. They were on this long and beaten run. But then after that, lost a few more home games after that, I think it was.
Yeah, that's right. And we also went in a period around then, similar to what's happened recently, always conceding the first goal and having to come back. The first halves were just awful.
So they were good for us last season, but this season we took an absolute pasting down at Spurs, and that was just before we played AC Milan actually in the Champions League. So there was an argument at that stage that we should have rotated maybe for that Spurs game because it was less important than the AC Milan game coming up, but we didn't really have players to rotate in, to be fair. Like we've got veterans or kids on the bench by that point. So What are your memories from that game and any other games you want to sort of pick up on of the last few seasons that between the clubs that you can really remember that stand out?
So on the it was 5-0, wasn't it, earlier in the season? Sorry, I'm not.
Yeah, it was 5-1. I think we scored right
5-1,
at the end.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd gone to bed by that point because it was 4 o'clock on a Monday morning.
Fair enough, yeah. I remember looking at that and thinking, oh, yeah, Newcastle looked tired. Like, it was very obvious. And Trippier had an absolute nightmare. Won it, like, three nightmares in a row, nightmare games, where Son just took him apart. It felt almost like taking lunch money from a kid kind of game. Like, Newcastle were just not in the right state to play against Spurs at that point, I don't think. And, like, we've had a lot of injuries. You guys have had ridiculous injuries, so... mitigating circumstances to that. I don't think any Spurs fan, I think actually a lot of Spurs fans have forgotten that game and how easy it was really for us because, it was a big win. Other games that stick out, one that I remember very well for some reason that comes to my mind is the Jonjo Shelvey red card game, which we were very thankful for him because I think we were pretty poor in that game. And then he, for some reason, decided to, I think, elbow Dele.
That's what he did.
And then I looked it up earlier, 12:30 kickoff at St James's Park in 2018. We're now our nice green kit, we won 2-1. I remember that one.
Yeah, Harry Kane used to like a goal against us. So he even scored in the 6-1. So it's
that's true. Yeah, and actually, that reminds me the game after the takeover we spoke about this last time. Yeah, where you guys went up after a minute, and we're thinking, oh god, somehow we won that. That was a good win.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got very excited, took the lead, and then it was Nuno actually, and we got taken apart. And I think Ndombele might have been there. It was a good, quite a good performance by Spurs. But then Dier scored an own goal, and we almost got a draw.
Yeah,
yeah. But it's there's been some good games actually between the clubs. So and I think we'll talk about this one in a minute. But I think it's probably likely to be high score. I think both teams will score anyway, judging by how they've been going. Yep. I looked at both clubs' form over the last five games. It's actually identical. So both clubs have won 3, drawn 1, and lost 1 of the last 5 league games. We're in a bit of a mini battle for the sixth place with Man United and West Ham, and you've got Chelsea and a couple of others just behind. Has it felt like Spurs' recent form has been good? Because there was that 3-0 defeat against Fulham, but generally they've been turning up and winning games.
Yeah, the results have been largely good, the odd kind of bad one, but the performances have been mixed for sure. We can't put together a 90-minute performance. We haven't done for a while. And I think the Nottingham Forest game the other day it really stood out to me that they scored a good goal, but it was really against the run of play on the break. And it just seemed to destroy Spurs mentally for about 15, 20 minutes from, you know, it was 27th minute they scored until halftime. Forest were all over us, had a few other chances. So dealing with those setbacks seems to be a problem at the moment. And we've conceded the first goal a lot. The goal against Nottingham Forest in the first half was our first half goal in 12 games at home. So we've had problems in the first half. Ange's philosophy is who cares when we score as long as we win, which is, you know, true. But it would be nice to see a more prolonged kind of performance like we saw earlier in the season where we dominated teams. But the results have been good. And the Aston Villa game was the big one where we won 4-0 away. But then to follow that up, 4 days later, losing 3-0 to Fulham, like it's just...
Like you said, a bit of inconsistency, isn't it?
Yeah.
With Ange, you referenced that Chelsea game earlier, and he's come in with a bit of criticism for sticking to his high line. And obviously, Van de Ven's one of the quickest players in the league, I think. So when you've got a defender
play a high line. You might be ready for him to be quick. There will be at least 2 or 3 occasions on Saturday night where you think, oh yeah, he's quick. It's insane. Yeah. He's so good.
Yeah. So do you think there's Ange has been criticized for sticking to that? And he just doesn't care. He's just like, this is what we're going to do. And he absolutely believes in what he's doing. And that's a strength. But could it also be a weakness if the game seems to need a tweak or in a way of getting Spurs a little bit more control, like you said, over the course of a full game?
It's an issue. I can see that argument, but I'm with Ange. I think, especially now, because we don't need to be winning every game. As he says, it's all about the performances, the building for whatever's to come next season, in my opinion. So from that perspective, I think, yeah, you stick to what you want to do rather than just changing to try and pick up a point or two. The criticism of the high line, for example, like I don't recall the Chelsea game, there was one, but I don't recall any other games where that's cost us a goal. So it seems like people are trying to find holes and issues with what he's doing and ignoring kind of the larger plan to it. In terms of tweaking and changing, he's definitely done that in games. The other day at Forest, he made 2 halftime substitutions and that changed the game. So I think there is an element of this. He could, the way he says it, like, I'm never changing. This is what I believe in. Mm. And that becomes kind of, what's the word, like a soundbite that people hold on to that then, in spite of what they're watching, they still have that in their head. Oh, he's not changing, which I don't think is true.
It's funny, like you win that many trophies and it doesn't matter which country, but you know what you're doing, you know, like you can't do that by being rigid and sticking to something and not changing. So not adapting and being flexible. And we've had this with Eddie Howe a bit, and I knew this was going to happen when we had a bit of a bad run. We've had all the mitigation of the injuries and everything, but Some people don't care about that. They just see that we were Champions League last season. This season we're not. So they see that as regression. They don't care about any of the context. They say things like he hasn't got a plan B, or he doesn't know how to make substitutes. Well, we've actually scored more goals from substitutes than any other club in the league. So it's like, things happen, you know, and it's just like these, especially these managers. And it's really good to love your manager and to really feel positive about him. And there's a lot to be said for that, because like you said, with your Conte and Mourinho experience, the club misses something when you're not in line with your manager and when you can't get behind them fully. So there's a lot to be said for that. So it's good to watch Ange and to watch what he's doing, and it's entertaining, and it's nice to see, especially from the Australian perspective as well. But for this game then coming up, so it's Saturday prime time for us, like we said, early kickoff, get it out the way before the rest of the games for the weekend. So Eddie Howe doesn't listen to this podcast, I don't think, so you're all right answering this. But I'm Eddie Howe, and I give you a call, and I'm doing some scouting, and I say to you, how am I going to beat Spurs in this game? And what do I and how am I going to beat Spurs, and what do I need to watch out for in terms of Spurs' danger? What do you say back to him?
I would say to beat Spurs, to actually score goals against Spurs, high and wide, get in behind the fullbacks who obviously tuck in. That's the key. Try and draw out Mickey van der Ven. He's going to win the ball. He's going to beat you there. But if you can at least kind of disrupt him, I think that's crucial. To stop Spurs, all of our play is about getting the wingers wide, building up around. You'll see a lot of passes in around the box in triangles, trying to find that gap for the winger to get through and then put a cross into the 6-yard box for Sonny to finish, or maybe Richarlison. That's definitely how we play. That's very obvious.
And it's been a big season for both in terms of injuries. We've had competition at various points about who's been the more injured, and Liverpool have been in that chat a little bit as well. But are there any doubts for this game injury-wise? Or, I mean, Son's going to play, isn't he? He's the one we're really worried about.
Interesting, because a lot of Spurs fans are kind of down on him at the moment. He's not quite... I think there's a bit of a feeling that he's not a centre-forward. He's a winger, which is probably some sort of truth to it, but we don't... You know, Richarlison's been injured a bit. I could see Richarlison starting, though, and Sonny playing left wing, maybe. Injury doubts, I think we're pretty good at the moment. The key will be, does he play Bissouma, I think, in midfield? I imagine it'll be Maddison, Saar, and then either Bissouma or Højbjerg. Bissouma's been kind of hit or miss lately, and Højbjerg is limited player, but he's effective. So I think that's a key decision. And then Brennan Johnson, if he can keep playing the way he's been playing, and Werner as well, which he would be the big loser of Richarlison coming in. They're going to be very crucial, I think. And that's where... Can Trippier, I assume Trippier will be right back.
He's been injured, so I was going to...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's been injured, so we've had Kraft, who's like the third choice right back, because Livramento is injured as well. So I was just going to say that could be a real concern for us if we've got our third choice right back against...
And left back Dan Burn?
No, left back will be probably Lewis Hall, actually, who's from Chelsea, because Target's injured. And Burns in the centre because Botman and Lascelles are injured. So
I can't keep up with your injuries. That's
yeah, no. our defence is really piecemeal at the moment. So we got away with it against Fulham, but yeah, Lewis Hall has not had much game time. He's only 19. Kraft is the third choice right back. So, and we've got Burn and Sharp in defence, who have been really solid the last two games, but they're really slow. They're really, really slow. So they've been sitting deep, and Dubravka doesn't like coming off his line like Pope does as well. So
that could help Sonny then. I would say I wouldn't be too concerned about centre backs, because I think as long as you've got bodies in there, Spurs find it hard to break down. But definitely the fullbacks would be because Werner and Johnson are both very quick. So if they can get in behind them, then that could be where we hurt you.
And it sounds for us as well like we've probably got Gordon playing on the wing. So that could be good if what you're saying about teams getting wide and quick.
On the left or on the right, Gordon?
He'll be on the left, but he's right-footed, so he cuts in.
Yeah. So, yeah, Porro's had an amazing season. He's been brilliant, but he can be a bit defensively questionable. Udogie on the left is just, he's going to be one of the best left backs in the world in a few years. He's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, so he's made it in my fantasy team, so I know a little bit about him.
Nice. So yes, a few assists.
But I think when Fulham kept Spurs out, that was like the first time Spurs hadn't scored for, and it was some kind of long record-breaking run, wasn't it? So
40, they've been scoring 41 games.
Yeah. So they've been scoring a lot of goals, but also conceding lately. Is that fair to say? So this, you think this might be a bit of a high-scoring game where both teams are getting on the score sheet?
Spurs have never conceded, the Fulham game aside. Not, I don't think we've conceded more than two very often, off the top of my head. So they're not high scoring games, but they're we don't keep clean sheets. So I can see a 2-2 or a 3-2 very easily. Which way that goes, I'm not sure. But yeah, there'll definitely be goals. It won't be a 0-0, I don't think.
Our games have been a real mixture of complete chaos, like West Ham. So there's been very little control from us. Up until Everton, we played well, but let them score right at the end with a stupid defensive mistake for penalty. Fulham, we started really badly, but we came into it well and we got the win, which was a really important win. So, it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. You're saying 2-2, 3-2 maybe? Which way are you going to go with the 3-2?
Yeah, I would say just on the basis of the season, I think Spurs are a little bit more comfortable in who they are as a team, if that makes sense. I think we've got a defined kind of way of playing, pretty consistent lineup, whereas you guys just have so many changes every week. And momentum as well is a big thing. If there's a winner, I think it'll be Spurs, but it won't be by much.
And there's the St. James's Park factor as well. We've been quite good at home. We've won most games. We've drawn three and lost three and won the rest. So it'll be good to see how it goes. We've got Isak and Bruno. If those two play well, then it's a real... If Bruno's been brilliant in the midfield, and he's been on 9 yellow cards as well for about 10 weeks now. There's a stupid situation this week where if he gets booked, he gets banned for 2 games. If he gets 2 yellow cards, he gets banned for 1 game. It's just the Premier League, the way it works. So, he's been impressive lately.
One thing I think we've struggled with lately is teams man-marking Maddison and kicking just lumps out of him every week. I don't know if you guys would have someone like that.
Not really. Unless Longstaff might go on him and do that, but yeah.
Yeah, which obviously helps us, because that's been a big issue, is Maddison just hasn't quite reached the form of earlier in the season. But yeah, I think Isak is one that I would love. Isak at Spurs, I think he would suit our style so well.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal. He's just been injured a bit, and him and Wilson have been switching in and out earlier in the season. Now Wilson's out as well. So, yeah, everyone's been injured at some point. So we'll...
Why can't Arsenal get some injuries for once? Why is the same team always getting the same injuries?
It's funny when Liverpool were complaining about their injuries, and yes, they've had injuries, but at least they've got good players. Like that. We've got Paul Dummett and Matt Ritchie, who have been around for 50 years, you know, so it's a bit different that way. But then there's people say that the style of football that managers like Howe and Ange have got means that it puts more demands on players' bodies, so that, you know, the pressing and the intensity, so could be something to that as well.
Yeah, that sounds like armchair kind of. There's so many sports scientists in there. I feel like,
yeah,
and Arsenal also play a pretty aggressive style too, and somehow they've been very lucky.
Sometimes it's just bad luck, isn't it?
Exactly.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Tommy. I'm sure we'll catch up sometime.
Did you give a prediction? Sorry, did you?
I didn't give one, but I'm going to say I think we've got a bit of momentum behind us. We've had good form lately. I think we're going to win 2-1. And that'll be really big for us in our Europa League hunt. And the way you're talking, you're not bothered about this season, so that's fine. You can let us have it.
I'm not that generous.
All right. Thanks for your time, Tommy. Speak to you soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.